All right, welcome into the ESPN 1000 Bracket Selection Sunday Special. Tyler Aki and Shane Norling from Basketball U with you. We're going to break down this bracket right now because a lot of interesting things took place on Selection Sunday. My overall, like, first blush when I look at it, I think the 68 teams are right, but where they're placed, kind of interesting based on what we saw play out this season, Shay.
The 68 teams are mostly right. I take issue with this team being in a little bit. 19 and 14, it's a little ridiculous, but 18th in KenPom, the net rating loves them. The resume's infuriating. I personally would have rather seen St. John's. I would have rather seen Wake Forest. I think a couple teams like that really got the shaft, St. John's and Wake especially. People are going to talk about Indiana State. Indiana State did not deserve to be here. Like, look, man, I get the record's really nice. Then I get that they had this incredibly successful season. At one point, they were AP top 25. All this stuff. But a team like that, you basically just have to win your conference. I'm sorry, that's life in the valley. And if somebody expects me to hop on and be like, I feel a lot of sympathy for teams 69 through 74, like, I don't. We already let too many teams into this thing. I don't really feel sympathy for the ones that
lost. Now, too.
We don't need to do any more. 68's fine. 64 was fine. We're good.
Indiana State was 1-7 in quad one and quad two games. And when you are a Valley team, you can't be 1-6, I should say, in quad one, quad two games. Like, you can't have that record. You just got to be better than that. So, overall, I look at... you brought up Wake and St. John's. The interesting about both Wake and St. John's was that neither of those two teams were even in the first four out. You look at the first four out teams, according to the committee, were Oklahoma, Seton Hall, Indiana State, and Pitt. So I found that interesting, that because St. John's, I mean, they played UConn as close as pretty much anyone's played UConn without actually beating UConn this year. And Wake Forest, I mean... little disappointing in the ACC tournament, probably needed a little bit longer run, and that's why they ultimately bow out. But yeah, I think overall I'm not too upset with the 68 teams. I would have loved to have St. John's in this tournament. I'd love to have Rick Pitino in, but hey, his brother Richard's in with New Mexico after
Thank
they
God.
Won the
God bless. West. We need the Lobos. Right. I need some Pitino in this tourney, man.
And the best part about it is you know that Rick Pitino will be showing up to the games.
Yep.
I think that is one of the saving graces here. All right, we are going to go region by region and break down everything that we saw, as we will start with a special guest. We've got Justin Pottinger with us, who wants to break down a little bit.
Popping.
Wants to break down a little bit of what Kansas
What's
is
going
doing.
On, guys?
Kansas's region there. So Kansas finds themselves in the Midwest region. And as we take a look at the Midwest region here, Purdue getting the one seed, Tennessee the two, your Kansas Jayhawks in at four, also have Creighton at three. I think we start this, though, with Purdue, because Purdue's the team that everybody wants to know, can they get over the hump? Can they make any noise? I think this is going to be a really interesting region and one that could provide a little bit of chaos here.
Potsy, what are your thoughts? I need to know your Kansas and Sanford thoughts.
What's the Kansas path
here? It's going to be interesting, guys. I mean, Purdue, that's the first thing I think of. They're going to have a tough draw with Utah State and TCU. Both those teams are good defensively, so it could give problems with Purdue. I'm happy with Kansas, guys. It could have been so much worse. I mean, the Midwest, I'm looking at it overall as a region, and I'm happy to see Tennessee in there. I'm happy to see Purdue. I'm happy
when you
to
say
see
happy, you mean those are teams you want to go up against.
Those are teams I want to go up against. I mean, they're teams that I don't even know if Kansas will see. Like, we've seen Purdue struggle in the past. We've seen Tennessee, both those coaches. I don't know if they can get it done when it comes to March Madness, the brights get light. So for Kansas, I'm sort of happy looking down the path, but game one, you got to focus on right. And Samford, guys, this team can shoot the ball. Lights out. So that can definitely give KU some trouble early on. I'm nervous.
Are you scared of McNeese State round two? Because look, man, like, I know Tyler and I are lockstep. Gonzaga blows. The way that they got a five seed is shocking. I think McNeese knocks him off. I know the 5-12 has gotten so popular, it doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah.
I have a feeling this year might be back. Like, Gonzaga McNeese State is such an awful matchup for the Zags to me. McNeese, one of those hot mid-major teams, gets Kansas round two. That one's where you really got to be scared for me.
Yeah, so looking here, though, I'm happy with Gonzaga getting the five. Let's get that out of the way. The Zags out of five, I think that's too high of a seed for this team. They should have been on that 6-7 mark. So getting that five there, I'm thrilled about. I think we can probably all agree we'll have McNeese State maybe as our upset here in this game. So I don't know, man. Like, McNeese State, another team, they can shoot the ball. They love the run, the floor, very good at taking three-pointers. I believe they're seventh in the country in three-pointer, something like that. Yeah. They're up there. So
Sanford's eight, by the way. You've got Kansas in the first two rounds is going to have to go against two teams that are top 10 in the country.
Yeah, it definitely. But as a Kansas fan, I mean, this season it has been up and down. And as bad as it seems it's been, having a possible 13 seed, then a 12 seed back-to-back, it could get pretty lucky for KU. I would say, though, nothing past the Elite Eight. Looking at these teams, seeing either a TCU or Purdue maybe later on, that will give KU some trouble. But there's first the road to the Sweet 16, I can see it for sure for the Jayhawks.
You know what's funny is I'm looking at the McNeese State schedule here of the teams they played this year. Four kind of stand out to me because they played four teams that were not D1 teams. Now, these don't go on the 30-3 record here. They played Biblical Studies. They played Champion Christian, Latorno, and the Mississippi University for Women.
No. What are we doing?
I don't want to be disrespectful, but you can't. You this got Biblical Studies on the other sideline. Let's and get the, serious,
Mississippi
please.
Mississippi University for Women.
Who's the AD at McNeese State scheduling this?
Think about it, like, all right, Will Wade comes in. Will Wade, by the way, I mean,
he's done a fantastic job.
Turn this team around.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping DePaul would make a reach out for him. He's done a great job.
They went 30-3. They were the Southland champs, 17-1 in conference after going 11-23 last year. This is all in year one under Will Wade. Like, that's a guy. He obviously, like, the fact that he's not behind bars right now is probably a bit of a miracle. But he's back in college basketball and he's coaching a really good McNeese State team that could make a little noise. I'm excited to see how far they go because that might be one of the popular sort of upset picks. They're ranked 60th in KenPom. They're coming out of the Southland Conference. Whenever you see those teams that are really favorable with the metrics like that out of mid-majors, I usually like those and I look into those. They're 7th in three-point shooting, like you mentioned a little earlier, Potsy. Like this team is a good basketball team, and they did it. Like, they've got a couple of guys who have played high-major basketball before, so I really like what they could do, and I think that it all depends on Kansas's health, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, what's Kansas's health going to look like, Potsy?
So right now, Bill Self is saying before the Big 12 tournament, they were not going to play, and that hopefully by March, this team will be the healthiest that they've been, honestly, since the start of the season. And I do just want to remind everyone, KU was 13-1 to start the season. First 14 games with a full healthy roster, wins over Tennessee, UConn, Kentucky, even TCU, a team that they might eventually see here in this bracket. So, I mean, as a full healthy team, KU is there, and they should be. But like you said, they're seeing two teams that love to just chuck the ball, and the Jayhawks have struggled, man, all season defending that three-point line. And that's big. That's been probably their biggest hole on defense. So seeing these teams, it can cause some trouble. But who knows? We saw Purdue. They took down Samford, beat them by 50 this year. They couldn't connect from long range, bit them in the behind, and they lost by 50. So we'll see, man.
Yeah, it's the thing with KU, too, like, we just haven't seen them healthy in so long. Preseason number one, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, you could make the argument at full health, they're the most talented team in the Midwest region. The problem is you got to get to full health, and you got to get comfy playing together again. And, like, when you go up round one and you're all playing, you feel good, and it's against a team that, like, I'm looking through some of the Samford numbers. They don't just hit their threes. They shoot a lot of them. 41% of their attempts are from the three-point line.
And 10 a game. 10 a game they shoot.
You go up against one of these hot-shooting mid-major champions. Like, that's where you get yourself in trouble if you haven't played as a unit in a while. So I think, like, Kansas survived that first weekend. All of a sudden, they're as dangerous as anybody in that region.
Let's take a look at the
surviving block. That weekend is going to be a bridge.
Yeah. That's going to be a really –
it's going to be tough.
That's dicey. Like, you're going to go up against a couple of teams that are just flamethrowers and are capable of putting up, like, 100 points. Looking at the bottom half of the region, this is actually a very interesting bottom half of the region here. I think the play-in game – for starters, is a really intriguing one. You've got Virginia and Colorado State. I think both of those teams are capable of winning a game in the tournament past the Texas matchup. And then outside of that, you look at the South Carolina-Oregon team matchup. Those are two teams that we've all talked about extensively. Like, South Carolina is a team that they can get hot. They've been very consistent. They won 24 games this year. And it felt like they've been disrespected all along the way. It took them forever to get ranked.
Yep.
It took them forever to kind of accelerate in the rankings. They've beaten Tennessee and Kentucky this year. And then Oregon, they make the late charge. They're one of the bid stealers. They get in because they win the final Pac-12 tournament. So there's a lot of intrigue there. And Folly Dante, I mean, if Folly Dante plays every game like he plays against Colorado, I mean, he's made his last 21 shots against Colorado. If he plays like that, and defensively, if he's great, that Oregon team certainly can make a run. And then Creighton and Akron is also another interesting matchup. Creighton, I think, has the most interesting KenPom page I've ever seen in my life because it's a lot of intense colors. You either get bright green, you get bright red, you get bright orange, or you get bright blue. And what that means is those are extremes in terms of where they rank. They are some of the best and some of the worst in a lot of different metrics. So that'll be interesting to see how they progress through the tournament with that. And then Tennessee, they bow out early in the SEC tournament. We've talked about it. No team that's ever lost their first game in their conference tournament has ever gone on to win the NCAA tournament. And they're one of those teams, if Dalton Connect isn't giving them 30 points per game, what really are they? Because they're not the defensive juggernaut that we've seen in years past.
This is the two seed I definitely wanted to see here in this region. Tennessee, I mean, they go cold on offense. Like you said, if Dalton's not connecting, man, it's a lot of sit and stare with this offense, and it bites them. It hurts. This was definitely a team I wanted to see for Kansas and just as a region for a two seed that can easily be upsetted before the Sweet 16.
Yeah, how about like in the first week? Like, yeah. I know it's St. Peter's done it before. They beat Kentucky. Yeah. Like, I just... this is one of those that I look at, and like Rick Barnes has made a career out of doing this. Getting that to, I don't really believe in Tennessee. The way that they played against Mississippi State in the SEC tournament, they were never in that game. They got murdered. And now you get into the part of the year where Rick Barnes just historically is atrocious. St. Peter's, it's not the same team, but like they have not that the energy. Same coach. Like, right, but like, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where you look at Wichita State post Shaka and you still were like, eh, Wichita's, like, it's just that kind of dumb sports fan meathead brain deal where I see St. Peter's and I'm like, Peacocks, baby. It's Rick Barnes. We're going to win this game. And so I'm kind of all in on that.
Yeah,
it's the second round matchup here for Tennessee. I'm looking at it could be a Texas, Colorado State, UVA. All
it's
three
a bitch,
of those teams,
no matter what, man.
That can take down Tennessee, man. I'm looking at Texas. Max Ames, he's Mr. March. Mr. March, you got DSU 2 down low. I'm telling you, dude, Texas can definitely make Tennessee's path very difficult.
Yeah, you know my thoughts on Texas, though.
Yeah, who cares? They got Oral Roberts legend Max Asemus. We're all good. Like, Texas.
That's... So, Mr. March.
Tennessee under Rick Barnes has gone to the tournament five times. They've been a five seed or better in every single one of those tournaments. They've only been to the second weekend twice. Like, that is the Rick Barnes effect. You. And by the way, if you get a Rick Barnes Tennessee team versus a Texas, like him going up against his former team, it's like the sweaty guy trying to press the button meme there. Like, that's what you're looking at in that matchup. So
it's going to be Texas and St. Peter's. I'm not worried about it. Go Peacocks. Go Cocks.
You got Creighton and Akron. You've got South Carolina, Oregon. I think any sort of matchup. I like Creighton to get out of that 3-14. I know some people may lean with the 14-seeded Akron because
– Who? Why?
Well, a lot of people like John Gross because he's a guy, he's a former high major coach at Illinois. So they think that maybe Akron could get through. But I personally like Creighton a lot in that matchup. But the next matchup, whether it's South Carolina or Oregon, either one of those is a really, really intriguing matchup because of the fact that, like, South Carolina's got stars on their team. Mm-hmm, even though the metrics hate South Carolina. But South Carolina has proven time and time again that they're not afraid of any matchup. And then Creighton just has this classic, like, tournament team to them. They've got the longtime guard with Trey Alexander. Yep. You've got a big who can do anything. Ryan Kalkbrenner can step out. He's the best defensive player in the Big East. And then you've got
Ashworth get hot.
Ashworth's a guy who can shoot like 45% from three. And Baylor Shireman is like an all-time March player. That guy, I hate saying this because it pisses people off, but it reminds a lot. And I'm not comparing them because he's not going to be this pro at all. But like his play style is very similar to Magic Johnson. Because he's just this 6'7" guard. He's got fantastic handles. He can make every single pass in the book. And then he'll step back and shoot threes too. And it feels like whenever Creighton needs a timely three, it's him. Whenever they need a timely bucket, it's him. He can get to the hoop. He can play in the mid-range. He can score at all three levels. Like, that's why I really like this Creighton team to make a good run here in March.
How much concern is there on the Blue Jays for losing their opener in the Big East tournament against Providence? I don't want to weigh it too much because they didn't need the game. They didn't really need the tournament. I felt like they weren't going to get to a two. They were probably stuck right in that 3-4 range. They end up with the three. This team all season, if people weren't watching them, they were a team that went on the road in spots where, like any other squad, probably it's a scheduled loss. I mean, think about the time, great example, when Creighton played UConn in Connecticut and Creighton just hammered them. Yeah. And it was a scheduled loss for UConn.
Best win in the country this year.
Blasted UConn at home. Creighton, in many, many ways, though, went in those spots, went on the road against teams that are on paper worse as kind of that dog, and you're like, wait a minute, Creighton, it feels like a schedule spot. They just win those games. Absolute road warriors all year. The conference tournament is what it is. I don't know that this is a national title team anyway, but they are extremely dangerous in that region.
Yeah, you look at their road wins this year. Georgetown, DePaul don't really count, but then you get Seton Hall in triple OT. You get Xavier on the road. You get Butler on the road. You get Nova on the road. Like, those are some wins that you can, like you mentioned, scheduled losses, especially in conference. I don't have them all in front of me, but I'd imagine a lot of those spreads are within 3 points, and they're winning all of them. So,
and maybe you don't value it because it was December 3rd, but they went on the road to Lincoln and smashed a Nebraska team that ended up being good. I look at this Creighton team, man, and I feel like historically people like to think like, yeah, you'll Sweet 16 and out, but this Creighton team's a lot more dangerous than that.
And they kind of have the formula too. Like, they have a great offensive team, and they have a top 25 defensive team.
And all they do is
it's a lot of firepower.
They need them. Yeah. Just when they need to hit shots, they hit them. That's my thing when I watch them. It's like, there's never a moment where they're starving and it feels like they just can't buy a bucket. It always feels like they have the answer.
They can be down 15 in a blink of an eye. They're down 3 points. I mean, they go on runs. For them, it's been defense that they've struggled with at times. At some point this season, conference play, they've struggled defensively for sure. But their offense is the story here. And a team like Tennessee, if they see them down the road, possible 2-3 matchup, Tennessee will not be able to hang with that Creighton offense. So as long as Creighton's playing against teams that struggle on the offensive end, they can easily see a path. And I'm looking at this just eyeballing Creighton might be my Final Four team in this region. I'm that confident with the squad. I don't know, though. I'm looking through it. I really like Creighton. South Carolina, Oregon, that's going to be the game to watch here. I believe that line's already out at -1.5, South Carolina. So that might be one of the more narrow spreads in this region for day one.
For sure. Okay, so if we boil it down to the Elite Eight, who do you guys like?
Oh, let's see. I believe I would go with Creighton. So Creighton, like I said, love what they've done this season. Offense has been excellent. And then I have Purdue. So I have Kansas going, surviving that 13 seed, surviving a 12 seed. And then I have Purdue still alive, taking down the Jayhawks, playing Creighton. It's a little chalky, but I do have Texas over Tennessee. So that's an upset there for you guys if you wanted.
I like that.
I'm going Creighton and Purdue in my Elite Eight also.
I've got the same thing.
I have Kansas losing to McNeese State. I'm sorry.
I did too, yeah.
I apologize.
It's fine. I understand. It's not the season. I was telling Aki, dude, every year I've always made a separate bracket, just Kansas winning it all. This year, I'm not even going to do it, dude. Like,
It's not going to happen. There's no chance.
It's not going to happen. I don't know. But that's hopefully, I like the road to the Elite Eight for the Jayhawks. So hopefully we can get there. But that's the absolute ceiling I have for KU.
Yeah, I think Purdue still gets there. I think Purdue could be a benefactor of path as well. I don't think anything's going to be too difficult for them. Whoever comes out of the Utah State TCU matchup, I think you'll be fine against. And then you go and take on either McNeese or Kansas. I think you can handle both of those teams too.
Doesn't Kansas at full health kind of have the recipe though? A little bit.
They
get
do.
Hunter Dickinson down low. You can defend out wide. You got good guard play. Like they just.
It's the problem. It's 3-point defending and scoring.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the number, dude, but KU's averaging like 3-point or 3 3-pointers a game made, something like it is a low number.
There's 210th in percentage.
Yeah, like it's and it's so annoying because it's not like these guys can't shoot. DeJuan's near a 40% 3-point shooter. Johnny Furphy, Kevin McCullough are in there healthy. Yeah. Timberlake off the bench. Like, it's not like we can't shoot. It's just
who's
not
tanking the percentages?
It's like no one shoots them.
Let's see.
No one shoots them. I believe Hunter Dickinson is like 2 for 40 this year. It's been
big transfer get.
Here's
good player.
Nicholas Timberlake is 25 of 85.
Shout out, Zed. Zed also is not a Timberlake fan.
Timberlake is third in 3-point attempts on this team and is shooting sub 30%. Mm-hmm. That's your problem.
It's been him and freshman Marco Jackson. He has not developed the way we wanted him to be.
Yeah, so. He's 11 for 40.
I will say though, doesn't it feel like Purdue is starting to warp back into who they were last time this year? I'm not saying they're going to go lose to a 16 seed again. But the last two games of the Big Ten tournament, it was all Edie. And it almost cost him against Michigan State. If Michigan State could have hit some shots, Purdue would have been dead. And then against Wisconsin, it did cost them. And it was all Edie. Like, Braden Smith didn't shoot only 3 threes. Fletcher Lawyer, 1 for 2. Like, these are guys who all season specialized in shooting and making threes. And all of a sudden, they aren't even attempting them. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wonder, like, if Kansas gets in that spot and Purdue is morphed back into this Edie or nothing kind of offense, that's where I feel like you might have the recipe if you make it that far.
I wonder.
I think a lot of people would love to see a Dickinson Edie rematch battle down low. I think that would definitely get Big Ten. All the Big Ten haters would hate that because I know they're not a fan of either of those two centers.
I think, too, that's why Creighton and Purdue is a fun matchup because you get Kalkbrenner versus Edie. You get two 7-foot behemoths who are built very differently, have different skill sets, but are both elite defenders.
Yeah.
Elite I think that defenders. Would be and this is to be honest, like if I'm Purdue, I don't love the big man path that I may have here. You may have to go through Kansas, who has Dickinson. You may have to go through Creighton, who has Kalkbrenner. Like those are kind of the foils, and then you've got guards who have better championship level experience than you.
You Utah State, TCU, both those teams, they don't have anyone that pops out, but it's a lot of 6'7", 6'8", forwards on both those teams that love to run the ball that can also give problems with Purdue. Shea, you've said this a ton, man. If teams just start forcing Purdue to only play through Edie, they're going to struggle so much.
I told you guys, I think it was off the air a couple weeks ago. I was like, my biggest problem with this team is not with like the guards. Like, they've grown up as three-point shooters. All season, they've been really good at it. My issue is always they don't drive the ball. Like, anything that happens down low is still through Edie. And I just feel like when you get into these tournament moments, yeah, your guards can hit shots, but if those shots aren't falling or teams game plan to run you off the line, and all of a sudden you don't have guards who are comfortable driving the basketball, it's just going to be Edie back to the basket over and over and over again. And he might go 14 and 19, but you might lose the way you lost to Wisconsin.
I think the thing that you need to do if you're the Purdue guards too is, like, if you, when you get to the rim, just put it up. Because if you miss, you've got the best offensive rebounder in the country right there, who isn't just going to grab the rebound. He's just going to put it back every single time. You have the best second chance player in all of college basketball. Maybe the best one we've ever seen, honestly. Like, the way that he cleans up all of those messes at the rim. I if I'm Purdue and the guards, and you've got a bunch, whether it's Lawyer, whether it's Smith, whether it's Lance Jones, like, all those guys are good basketball players and good shooters too. But if they can use that and get to that first level, as opposed to settling for a lot more threes like we've seen in the past, then I think Purdue makes some noise. I do think, though, that they get to the Elite Eight. I feel pretty good about that. Mm-hmm. I think they're
All clean swept Purdue, Creighton, Elite Eight.
So, we clean swept those two. It sounds like all three of us are on McNeese over Gonzaga and early exit for Tennessee. Early exit for Tennessee.
I have Tennessee getting to the second weekend, but I could be talked out of it.
I'm rocking with St. Peter's. Go Cox.
I do want to – Shay and I will talk about the 2-15 matchups, because we've had a 2-15 upset each of the last 3 years. It may be time to start consistently picking one, but we'll discuss that, who's maybe the most vulnerable. Potsy, thanks for joining us. And
of course,
good luck,
guys,
to your Jayhawks.
This was awesome.
Rock chalk.
Thank you, guys. Hey, we'll talk brackets later. Thank you.
All right, Justin Pottinger. He produces with us on Basketball U every single Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on ESPN 1000. All right, let's go to a different region here. We already knocked out the Midwest. Let's go to the South. That is where Houston is the number one overall seed, Marquette the two. Then you got Duke in there as a four, Kentucky as a three. This is an interesting bracket, and I texted you earlier. I had the toughest time navigating through this one out of any of the four regions that we saw.
I had an easy time because I just wrote Houston through to the Final Four. Like, getting through the rest of it and how it's all going to play out was a little difficult, but I knew from the jump, like, I was taking Houston to the Final Four here. Marquette, boy, that's tough. Like, any of the three teams. Now, Florida is interesting. This is where I kind of want to start with you on this bracket, because navigating what you do with Florida after what happened today, big injury, really impacts their big depth. And this was a team, like, Pottinger's been on it. I think both of us have kind of adopted it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Thought could make a really deep run. And now all of a sudden they're entering at maybe not half strength, but three-quarter strength as they go into the tournament, certainly from a depth perspective. Boise State and Colorado, neither of those are a slouch matchup. Maybe more especially if it's Colorado. I just think that that's kind of unfortunate and really interesting what you want to do there.
Well, Micah Hanlockton was the one that went down today, and you look at his numbers, he is fifth in offensive rebounding percentage in the entire country. You lose that, I mean, this is one of the best rebounding teams in the entire nation, and you're losing your best rebounder.
And it's not like he's a big time player. Like, he was a limited role this season. He doesn't play a ton. But he's a 7-footer who just comes in and offers stability rebounding the basketball. And you don't have that now. You're going to have to ask for more time out of your other bigs. I just think this is a situation that sucks for Florida. Because if they'd been healthy, man, they're dangerous as a 7. And the fact that they're not, like, ugh, I just feel bad. Like, Colorado, I have a feeling Colorado's going to be the matchup there between the play-in Colorado and Boise State. That's a tough draw for me.
I'm looking at the rest of the South, and yeah, like, I could see either way. Like, honestly, like, whoever comes out of that Florida Colorado game, I like over Marquette. I think both of them, especially with the dicey health situation with Tyler Kolek. He's going to be coming back from an oblique, and who knows, maybe he could have played in the Big East championship against UConn. But I just, if, and again, the Shaka stuff scares me. Like, he's 1-7 in the tournament in the last 10 years.
Yep.
And he's had seeds of 2, 3, and 6 during that span too. So it's like, yep, he's been favored in a lot of these games, and his only win is last year in a 2-15 matchup, going up against Vermont. So you look, I mean, you look back, he hasn't made the second weekend since he went to the Final Four with VCU. Like, that's last time he went to the second weekend.
He's still living off of that too, man. Like, his entire reputation is built off of VCU going to the Final Four, and everything since then has been a complete disaster. Last year, Michigan State kicked you out second round. Now you're a 2 seed again, and like, Florida's maybe less talented, but it's not like they're missing any of their starters. I still think Florida can go out and beat them. I still think Colorado could go out and beat them. I think Boise State could go out and beat them. I just, the Shaka thing, like, this is going to be the year that suddenly he's going to make a run. And even if he does, do we buy he's going to the Elite Eight? I mean, I feel like, Tyler, like, the Kentucky thing, they could win the entire tournament, they could lose in the first round, and neither result would really shock me. I think for Oakland, who they pulled out of the Horizon League as the champion, I thought Oakland was one of those mid-majors that could be kind of dangerous in the tournament. Kentucky's not a great draw for them, because Kentucky just scores nonstop. Yes. I think that Kentucky's going to make that a bit more of a track meet than Oakland wants to get involved in. But the second round matchup there for the Wildcats, you get NC State or Texas Tech, two good teams. Especially NC State record-wise isn't going to impress anybody, but the little magic carpet ride they just went on in the ACC tournament and offing North Carolina in a gotta-have-it spot, those teams are always dangerous. Low seed, got hot at the right time, and now they're feeling themselves. I kind of like NC State to get to the second weekend.
Interesting. Yeah, that's the thing, is Kentucky, they struggle in some of these high scoring games. And I mean, can you imagine the matchup between Ivicic and DJ Burns? I mean, you're talking about complete opposite human beings. Burns could bully him all day down low, and they could just run the offense through him. It'd be funny to watch for sure. I do think, though, like, both of the, getting back to the Marquette matchup in the second weekend, or in the second round, I should say, Florida, great rebounding team. You've got Colorado, who's got some good rebounders on their team, some athletic players in the post as well. They also have Eddie Lampkin, who's a nice physical player down low too. Like, both of those teams going up against Marquette. Marquette's a bad rebounding team. 278th offensive, 268th on defense. So if they're not going to get to the boards, they better be lights out shooting in that game. They're going to need like that epic Cam Jones game or Tyler Kolek to hit like 5 threes in that game. Cause if you're not hitting threes in that game, you're not getting any second chances. They're going to clean up pretty much every single rebound, it feels like, no matter who they end up playing in that game. I'm kind of ruling out Boise State, because even if Boise beats Colorado, I don't think they're beating Florida. And Florida's just got some like pop guys too, like Walter Clayton, he could go off for them. Like, they've got some guys who could maybe raise some draft stock as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really fascinating kind of way to play this out. And just, again, I can't trust Shaka Smart, man. I just can't do it. Like, I just can't do it. I'm sorry, there are certain guys. It's the same thing, St. Peter's in Tennessee. I can't trust Rick Barnes. I refuse. And if I'm wrong on it, tip the cap. Like, it is what it is, but I'm not gonna put my opinion on it, because I refuse to trust him. So I'm taking Florida to go through that part of it. I like NC State. And then I start to look at the top half of this bracket, and it's where I get real iffy on how to proceed. Because, like, Duke, Vermont, I'm not going to act like I've watched a lot of Vermont this year, but I've watched a little bit of Duke, especially lately, and I am not impressed. They are playing about as poorly as they could be hoping to play going into this tournament. They really have to get right early, and their reward for it is playing either Wisconsin or James Madison, who, spoiler alert, James Madison, if you don't know, really good out of the mid-major group. So, like, this to me is the most interesting outside of who I think is going to make the Final Four, if that makes sense. I kind of think Houston's fait accompli. They're by far the best team in this region.
Yeah.
They're going to be the Final Four team, but the process of getting Houston's opponents is really interesting to me.
Houston, I feel like, matches up really well with any sort of outcome that they could have along their path.
Yep.
That's why it feels like they're a foregone conclusion to get to the Final Four. Like, James Madison, I'm with you. I like the 12-5 upset there over Wisconsin. I know Wisconsin got hot, but that shooting's not going to last forever for an uncharacteristically that was an uncharacteristic performance from them getting as far as they did. And then Duke, like, I don't know, like, I can't see it. I don't see it with this team. Who's going to be the guy that gets it going for them? I just feel like Houston's going to say, look at all these guys. They all think they're NBA players. They're all lottery picks, whatever. And they're just going to out-tough them. And I feel like, remember the Houston-Illinois matchup a couple years ago where Houston was just the tougher team in that game because that's Kelvin Sampson's brand of basketball? I think that's exactly how Houston is going to look at that Duke team and just say, you know what? You may have the bigger brand than us. You may have more NBA players on your team than us, but we're going to be the tougher team today. And that's how we're going to beat you. We're going to crush you on the glass. We're going to play better defense than you. And you're not going to be able to get away with all the soft stuff that maybe you've gotten away with in the past. So we're going to play physical with you. And that's why Duke will probably not make it past Houston.
I do think Duke gets through Vermont. I do think Duke probably gets through the Wisconsin or JMU matchup. And I think Duke then gets to Houston. And that's where the wheels just fall off. Like, Houston, to me, it's every year now. And it started really a couple years ago when you mentioned them when they played Illinois a few years back. That felt like the resurgent Kelvin Sampson moment of, oh, he's really got this program humming. This guy can make Final Fours. This going to make runs like this. But it's still, they just haven't gotten to that national championship getting over the hump. And this year is always all season. Well, they've got a lot of disrespect, in my opinion, especially from our producer who was with us a few minutes ago. But I like this Houston team a lot. You said, like, we're going to play better defense than you. Nobody's going to play better defense than them. At any point throughout the tournament, nobody will play better defense than they will. I know you might be burned off because of the Iowa State thing in the Big 12 title. Iowa State's a really interesting team that we'll have to talk about when we get to the East. But this Houston team, I just like them so much out of this bracket. And Duke, I'm kind of in the same spot with you. I also saw something that just kind of tells you the state of the sport right now, which was this guy who I respect as like a draft analyst talking about who are the best NBA prospects in the tournament. And number three was Kyle Filipowski. Oof. And I was like, is it that dire in the tournament that that's number three? That's brutal. I remember when Zion, Barrett, and Reddish all played on the same team.
Yeah.
What has happened to our beautiful game?
Kyle Filipowski's had such a strange season this year with the tripping thing. He's been super inconsistent.
He's a jag.
Like, he's one of those guys. He just has the best PR team. Like, Ryan Kalkbrenner's better. Maybe not as an NBA prospect, but as a college player, I like Ryan Kalkbrenner more. I like Donovan Klingon a hell of a lot more. I mean, Donovan Klingon must have the worst PR team out of all these guys, too. Like, that is a true difference maker who is an extremely skilled basketball player who, oh, by the way, also happens to be 7'2". So who do you have going through to the Elite Eight here?
Houston and Florida.
Houston and Florida. That's exactly what I have as well.
I don't love the Florida pick just because of the depth and what it does to their rebounding ability and the way they're going to have to shorten the rotation. But I love everybody else in this region less. So I just like had to throw Florida through.
Yeah, this is a region of crap. Like, I am thoroughly unimpressed by a lot of these teams.
Tyler, it's kind of a bracket of crap. When you really look, like, the Midwest was kind of a region of crap. You got Creighton, you got Purdue, Tennessee, and we don't trust either of them. And then Kansas, garbage. Here it's like Houston and garbage. Kentucky, maybe. The whole bracket, I look at them like there's only a few teams that I really believe in this year.
All right, let's go on over to the East, and that is where you find your number one overall seed, UConn. You've also got Iowa State as the two. This is where you find Illinois and Auburn, your four seed here. When you take a look at this, UConn is the number one overall seed, very deserving. They were they won their conference tournament. They were the only one seed that won their conference tournament, in fact. and just the dominance that they went with through this entire season. They were clearly the best team in the country, and they proved it when they went out and won the Big East.
Yeah, UConn all season. Obviously defending national champions. They haven't been number one all year. It's been more Houston, but they felt like a kind of wire-to-wire thing.
It would have been interesting because they weren't lauded very highly in the preseason. And I wonder if they were thought of higher in the preseason, if that would have been a difference maker. If that would, maybe we would have seen them number one overall a little earlier.
Well, I still remember that time, like, early in the season when it was UConn's two, like out of nowhere, UConn's number two in the country. Where did that come from? And then it just felt so obvious of like, of course they're number two. They've got maybe the best coach in the country at this point. I don't know who you could argue is doing a better job than Danny Hurley the last few years. Obviously they're chalk. And I was listening, like before we got on, the Bracketology special, talking about the whole bracket. And everybody, man, it just feels a little too destined for me. Mm-hmm. Everybody, UConn's far and away the best team in the country. I'm going chalk. Like, I know it's dumb, but I gotta take UConn all the way to win a national championship. I'm a little scared to do that. I'm a little scared to go chalk. And, dude, it's so hard to win two straight. Like, I know maybe less so in this sport than in others, but there's just something about going back-to-back that feels extremely difficult.
I think this is the hardest championship to win in all of sports and to do it back-to-back. Like, the last time we saw a back-to-back champion was 06-07 Florida, and they had the benefit of they brought all their starters back. UConn's not doing that. They lost three starters from a year ago, including their two best players in Sanogo and Jordan Hawkins. So they had some retooling to do. And listen, tip your hat to Dan Hurley. The fact that this is the number one overall seed this season is a big-time coaching job, the way that he got that whole group to mesh, go through some of the injuries with Klingon earlier in the season as well. So this is a really, really good UConn team. All right. We've both been in this little funk with Iowa State. Quite frankly, I don't get it. I don't know how they won the Big 12 this year. And you look, they were the they were not the top two seed because you cannot put the fifth team with the number one overall team. But you look at them, Big 12 champs, like I mentioned, and I just cannot figure them out. I can't figure, like, they're the team I've had the worst read on all season long.
I've kind of been the same. I've said a lot. You get them out of Hilton. I think they lose a lot of that magic. They always ride on Hilton magic.
They're 9-7 in neutral and road games this year.
When they play at home, man, oh my goodness, are they good. And they just have that. Like, Hilton magic's a thing for a reason. People don't say that just because it's fun. Like, it actually is real. Houston went there early in the year in conference play and got blasted. And, like, that, it's a real thing. My problem with Iowa State is, like, I keep trying to find these spots to fade them. And, like, neutral site, Big 12 tournament, I'm thinking, okay, now's the moment. The Cyclones, it falls apart. It's been fun. But they just win games. And I think at some point you have to respect a team that's like that. Like, you have to respect a team that just finds ways to put it together. And despite it all, fifth in KenPom. What a job done by their coach, Otzelberger. It's just like all of it's – I hate them, but I'm at a point where, Tyler, I'm going to be honest, I'm riding them to the Elite Eight. I just
– Are you really?
They win games. At a certain point, I have to respect the fact that they just win games, and they've gotten such good play out of so many of their contributors, Keyshawn Gilbert specifically, who's been incredible for this team. The fact that they're fifth in KenPom is unbelievable. The fact that they won the Big 12 is unbelievable. How am I supposed to continue to deny them?
It's amazing they're fifth in KenPom despite the fact that their offense checks in at 55th.
Yep.
And it reminds me of some of those early stage Virginia teams where defense is elite. The defense is number one, according to KenPom. But the offense was a little bit of a slow roll. And then that team that finally broke through in 2019 with Virginia, they had an immaculate offense. This offense feels a little bit sluggish at times. And even though they can go out and punch some people in the mouth at times, it's too inconsistent for me. And that's why I think that this Iowa State team actually bows out in the second round. It doesn't matter what the matchup is. whether it's Washington State or Drake. I currently like Washington State a little bit more, but Washington State to me is such a fundamentally well-built team. Kyle Smith, their head coach, has done a great job this year. Thought that team very well could have won the Pac-12 tournament this year. And I just think that they are the, like, I feel like Iowa State all year has gotten the bump from the Big 12, and that, you know, my thoughts on the Big 12, are they the best conference in
sure.
Are they the best conference in the country? Probably, but it's not as like everyone thinks there's this ginormous gap between the Big 12 and whatever you deem the second best conference in the entire country. And I don't think it's that big. You just look at how the Big 12 kind of performed outside of their conference. It was a struggle at times. So I look at Washington State. I think they're a team that can certainly pull off that upset. And that's why I don't think Iowa State's going to get very far in this dance here. Couple other intriguing teams, Auburn, who is coming off of an SEC championship where they pretty much slaughtered everybody in their path. Yeah. They looked really good. A little surprised they are a four seed, because the way that they played in the SEC tournament, certainly looking a little bit more like a two seed than anything else. And I mean, the metrics love them too. KenPom's got them fourth overall. They were a 27-7 team too. Like, this team is, what do you think? Could this be this year's UConn, Auburn? Like,
I literally, a team that you took just, the words out of my mouth. You just made like, me that's so the angry. Way,
now I'm looking at it a little more, and I think Auburn could be a little bit like last year's UConn team.
My hottest take, Tyler, on the bracket, and I'll spoil it right now. I know we haven't even given out our final fours. Auburn's my national champion. Auburn checks the boxes for me. They're playing really well right now, stormed through their conference tournament. They have experienced guards. They are top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. The only team in the country that can claim that right. I feel like this is a team at a four seed that has been wildly disrespected in terms of seeding. It's the same way you and I talked about UConn basically a year ago today when UConn checked in as a four seed last year. And I said, this is not a four seed. Auburn this year ain't a four. Yale's going to get their, I don't know if I could swear, so I'm not going to. Yale's going to get their effing head taken off. They're going to get destroyed by this Auburn team. And then I think you get a little bit of a free space, whether it's UAB or San Diego State. The first weekend feels breezy. Just beat UConn, and you're going to the Final Four. Like that,
yeah,
that's the team to me.
UConn and Auburn, that Sweet 16 matchup is going to be glorious. That is going to be high-level basketball. And I think that Auburn – now, I will say this. Auburn, I do think, got sort of a best-case scenario path as well through the SEC tournament. Like, you look at it, South Carolina's a good team, but then you get Mississippi State instead of Tennessee, and then you get Florida instead of getting Bama or Kentucky somewhere along the line.
Sure.
I think you got a fortunate path there, but you still went out and pretty much hammered every single team that you encountered. And I just think that this Auburn team, like, And UConn was a four seed last year too. Like, this Auburn team is clicking at the right time, and they have very few holes. And the interesting part too is they're one of those teams. Bruce Pearl's got a deep team. They run 10-man rotations consistently.
Yep.
And that can be both a gift and a curse at times. But the way that Auburn kind of breezed through the SEC there, it may be more of a gift.
And honestly, when you look at their schedule, the seven losses, six of them were neutral site or away. Like, you're talking about a team that at home, that's what I really look at. And I know that's not fair. You should value how teams play on the road. It's just in this sport, and I don't think people give this enough credit, when we hit the tournament where you don't play road games, it's all neutral site. Mm-hmm. Winning on the road in conference play in college basketball is, I'm going to swear, fucking impossible. It is maybe the hardest thing to do in sports in my mind. It's so difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, like, as a gambler, you know how I do it. That's basically how I live.
Home teams,
like, find home teams with spreads that look a little funky. I took advantage of it when Auburn went to Florida. I took advantage of it when Auburn went to Tennessee. Like, there were moments where you could pick your spot. Winning on the road is so hard. So I don't care so much when I see a team has only lost in those spots, except the weird, funky loss to Kentucky at home. The rest of their losses, neutral site or on the road, I start to look at this, and yes, they had a beneficial SEC tournament, but they just came off of winning three easy neutral site games. I think the first weekend's going to be a breeze. Auburn-UConn is a game that I need to happen because I just want to watch it.
And you look, think about that Kentucky game too. Kentucky can beat anybody, right? Like, that's just the way they operate. That's the way they play. They can just flamethrow. They've got – Kentucky has the highest ceiling and the lowest floor in this entire tournament, yep, in my opinion, because of the fact that they just have all the talent in the world, but they play no defense. And when you play no defense, you're very volatile in this tournament.
Look, they could score 100 points in regulation. They could also have an off day shooting. Like, they're the best 3-point shooting team in the country. Mm-hmm. But how many times do we see teams that live and die like that? Have an off night, you're dead. Sorry. Yeah.
The more I've talked about it, the more I may pick Auburn to the Final Four. I've got a different team right now. Full disclosure, I've got UConn right now. But the more I look at it, you know what this reminds me of? That UConn-Auburn matchup? It reminds me of Michigan State Duke from, what was that, 2019?
That was the Zion Reddish
Barrett year where
Kenny Goins hit the three.
They were this foregone conclusion to get through to the Final Four, but there was a pesky little Michigan State team that had good guards. They had some other good players. They have a great coach. And Auburn kind of checks all those boxes right there. And I think you've got some really good athletes with Auburn as well. Jahni Broome is one that I certainly love to watch. But there's – and then they've got – people don't talk about it because they play 10 guys, but Aiden Holloway is one of the top recruits in the entire country that they have coming off the bench for them too. They've just got this full buy-in. It takes a lot for a coach to go out and play 10 guys. Because you're looking at every single one of those guys in the locker room, especially some that have NBA potential in them, and saying, we're slashing some of your minutes for the betterment of the team. And the fact that they haven't cracked all along the way as a result of that is pretty, pretty impressive to me. Reminds me a little bit of Florida State, how Florida State has all of those, had that deep bench for the longest time. And Auburn's kind of got a little bit of that magic with it right now, where they've got the kind of the UConn charm, where they're just hot heading into the tournament. And they're going to go up against UConn in all likelihood if they get to that Sweet 16 matchup. So hoping we get to that, because that would certainly be a fantastic one.
My dad is texting me as you're shitting on Kentucky that they have the lowest floor and they play no defense and the three-point shooting could be – he's an Oakland University alum, so he's like, go Grizzlies, we're going to beat Kentucky. Bad news, Dad. No, I don't think you are, but I don't think Kentucky's very good either. I will say in the East region, my favorite Cinderella candidate is in the East. It's Duquesne.
Interesting. Okay.
They got hot in the A-10 tournament, a tournament nobody expected them to win as the sixth seed. Got hot, beat VCU today to win, and they're ending a 40-plus year drought of not making the NCAA tournament. Team like that, just happy to be there, wants to stay there. I think they got a nice little soft matchup with BYU, who had an awful showing in their conference tournament, and I like this Duquesne team to be kind of that cute America loves them Cinderella.
You know, they do check that box, but I think back to, was it a couple of years ago when Georgetown and I believe it was Washington each did the same thing. Both were mega bid stealers that went through, won their conference tournaments on some magic ride, and then got clapped in the first round. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to Duquesne here. BYU is a good team, played very, very well in the Big 12 this year, especially for a team that was leveling up as well. I think BYU is going to be one of those teams that I've got BYU actually in my Elite Eight.
Do you know what would be funny is if the Big 12 sneaky just is awful? Just like the Big 12 is.
If they,
like
they go Big 10.
It's what the Big Ten's been for a few years. I'm just thinking about this after what you said, because you mentioned BYU leveling up, going from they were independent, right? I don't want to.
BYU was
were they playing a Mountain West?
Mountain West. Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. So BYU leveling up and play Houston, same deal, leveling up to the Big 12, playing more difficult competition. Both of them play really well. So
how about UCF? UCF's first game in the Big 12 was a win against Kansas.
We might be onto something. We got to fade the Big 12. Is it all of these level up teams are just that good that they're playing with the best conference in basketball? Or is the best conference in basketball actually not that good?
Ride with the level up teams too? Like, do we ride with BYU and Houston, the teams that kind of worked their way into this thing? I do want to bring up one more, and that's Illinois going up against Morehead State. I think this is going to be a pretty popular 3-14 upset. Maybe not in like some of the local pools here, because a lot of the homers will go with Illinois. But if Illinois can get through that first round, I think they've got a pretty good path to the Elite Eight.
But they got my Duquesne team right in the way of them. I got to enjoy my Cinderella run. I got no allegiance to Illinois. I don't care. I-L-L-L-L-L-L. I don't care. Put as many L's as you want here. I don't love this Illinois team, really. Going to say it. Not a big Terrence Shannon fan as a person. So I just I don't know, man. I have a hard time with this Illinois team. I don't think they're going to lose to Morehead State. I don't really get why that would be such a popular upset pick. Illinois playing well at
Morehead
the right State's time again.
Got a guy who goes 20-10, and like they could be one of those pesky 14 seeds. I wouldn't rule them out. Is all I'll say. I wouldn't rule them out.
It's interesting. It's definitely something I'm going to think about now as I look a little deeper into some of these games. But yeah,
all right. You've got Auburn and Iowa State in your Elite Eight.
That's right.
Right now, I've got UConn and BYU. All of this subject to change, by the way.
I might change it to Auburn and Duquesne.
Just ride the lightning. Ride the lightning. All right, getting to the West region, that's where North Carolina is your one seed, Arizona your two, Baylor your three, Bama your four. I think this is a pretty interesting region. I think there's a lot of like storylines within this region too. Obviously, the big one being that we could get a Caleb Love revenge game in Carolina and Arizona after both of those teams won their regular seasons but came up short in their conference tournaments here. This is where we find your team too. Number 9 seed Michigan State going up against Mississippi State as well. And I think you've got some really intriguing mid-majors. This may be like the best mid-major region as well. Grand Canyon, Charleston, New Mexico, Colgate, Dayton, Nevada.
This, when you said biggest story, I thought you were going to go with the battle for which is the real MSU, Mississippi State or Michigan State. My school obviously is the real MSU, regardless of the result. I told you when we got on, nothing has jumped off a page more to me than Michigan State just bombing Mississippi State, making it everybody kind of feel like, oh, they belong, before they get their fucking head lopped off by North Carolina. Like, I can already see all of that playing out. The rest of this bracket, like, again, I'm just going to spoil it. This was easy for me. I wrote North Carolina straight across. I think North Carolina is a wagon. They have been most of the season. They're back to playing some of their best basketball despite the loss in the ACC championship to NC State. St. Mary's, I hate really anybody out of that conference. Gonzaga, I didn't think was any good this year. St. Mary's, I really don't care about, but I think they beat Grand Canyon. Although, that's a fun matchup. That Grand Canyon team is good. Bama, also interesting. Bama's another one of those, I don't know how you feel about it. Are they last year's UConn candidates? Because we haven't talked much about this. I think the SEC actually was the best conference in college basketball this season.
I'm not very high on this Bama team. There was a metric out there about like momentum towards the end of the year, and Bama was last, like dead last in the entire country.
I knew they hadn't been playing great, and the whole issue, they're Kentucky, like maybe Diet Kentucky, where they'll score like crazy, not quite to Kentucky's level, but they also will play zero defense.
Yeah, and I think that hurts them. I look at the matchup too against Charleston. You want to talk about like your little like rabbit's feet for the NCAA tournament? Pat Kelsey's kid is a hype man that sits on the bench. Kid's like 10 years old.
Love it.
I think that's going to be one of those things we're going to look back at the one shining moment and see a lot of Pat Kelsey's kid. I think Charleston actually pulls the upset in round 1 against Alabama.
Wow. Okay.
I'm a little higher on St. Mary's than you are. I actually like St. Mary's. Aiden Mahaney's been a really good guard this year. So I've actually pushed St. Mary's through to the Sweet 16, but I'm with you. This was an easy North Carolina to the Elite Eight and Final Four for me. I really think that this Arizona I've got as my other Elite Eight team here, but of all of my Elite Eight teams, they're probably the one I'm the least confident in.
I actually have Dayton as my other Elite Eight team.
I can see it.
The region I was the most upset happy. Like, I have Baylor over Colgate. I figure Baylor's going to win that game. But I have, honestly, I'm rocking with Patino. I got New Mexico over Clemson, New Mexico over Baylor, and then New Mexico Dayton in the Sweet 16. I like Dayton to win that game. I got Dayton in my Elite Eight. I'm calling my shots, man. I want Rich Pitino coaching deep. As much Rick Pitino sideline as we can get, because we were robbed. St. John's should have been in this tournament. I'm mad about it, and I want Rich to get his vengeance.
Oh, man, if we could have somehow had a Dayton matchup with those two. Now, New Mexico did have to go out and win the Mountain West to ultimately get in, so you couldn't have really gotten that. But they were a bid stealer, and credit to them. They played fantastic. Looking at some of the other intricacies of this, the Colgate matchup is a fun one for me because they feel like one of those teams that is a due mid-major. They're now in their fourth straight tournament under Matt Langle. They're always like on the doorstep. Like every once in a while, they just get absolutely crushed. But they're a good shooting team year after year. And I'm just worried, like, if Baylor can't slow them down, like play their speed and their tempo, that's going to be a bad matchup for them. Because Colgate's a team that moves fast.
There is something to be said, too, for a team that's been there as often as Colgate has. Not that they've
won. You may have guys that have played in four tournaments now.
Right. You've got the tournament experience. Like, you know what this stage is. That the lights aren't going to be too bright for you because you've been here so much. That is an interesting point. And, like, I want to be clear. This is my very early fire from the hip bracket. I am not marrying myself to what I say today. I will take care of that Tuesday, Wednesday, as we get closer to the tournament actually starting. These are just like fire from the hip, first blush takes. I like Baylor over Colgate, but the point you bring up about Colgate having the experience and having been there and seen this moment, that is important, especially in a sport like this. It's a part of why, I don't want to say it because just I'm going to draw myself into getting fucking pissed off again, Tyler, is Michigan State. I get it. They're bad. They shouldn't be here, but they are. And there's a part of me that's like, Izzo last year was kind of in a similar boat. Not quite to the extent of going to lose in the miss the tournament, but disappointing 7 seed. Let's see how. And then all of a sudden in the tournament, they played their best ball. Now you have a week off. You're going to get Mississippi State. I told you, I think that's a game they win. Doesn't it kind of feel like Michigan State, North Carolina, early on here, second round, people will be talking about, well, North Carolina, they're going to get killed. And I think they would. And then Izzo just wins that game. He never beats teams in big moments. Mm-hmm. Texas Tech in the Final Four, or like Duke or North Carolina in the 09 National Championship, or so many other times against Roy and Coach K. But in a moment like this, against Hubert Davis, Izzo gets a win against North Carolina. Like, it just kind of feels one of those things that would happen. And not that I'm talking myself into it. I didn't even want my team to make it. But now that they're here, they have the experience. Tyson Walker, A.J. Hogard, Madi Sissoko have played how many tournament games?
Right.
UNC wasn't even in the tournament last year.
But they have a group of guys. They have two of their best players. Their two best players are guys who played on a team that was a national runner-up before. I look at Michigan State, like, for a team that was preseason four, and you're telling a one seed you got to play that team in the second round. And again, UNC is the last of the one seeds here. They got the worst draw out of it. But if I'm UNC, I kind of hate that draw. Like, you look at some of the other potential teams that now some people may see, oh, well, FAU against Northwestern, like FAU and UConn could be an interesting thing, but not really. I don't think, I don't think FAU is what they were last year. I think they're going to be a trendy pick, but I actually like Northwestern a lot more over FAU. And then you look at some of these other ones. I think A&M's a solid 9 seed, but like the Utah State TCU, that's a joke. And Michigan State, I mean, that's the preseason number four team, and you as a one seed may have to catch them in the second round. It's a pretty shitty draw there.
And ask Purdue how fun it was playing Michigan State, because they did not enjoy playing in that game. Like, the preseason pedigree does mean something when you get to this part of the season. I know people don't buy it because you kind of are who you were throughout the year. But a team that was the preseason number four team in the country, that has the talent, that's returning guards who have played a ton of tournament games, that has freshmen in Xavier Booker and Cohen Carr who have had really good seasons and are starting to play better basketball, it's a more dangerous nine seed than they're letting on. I don't think they're really a threat at all, because I don't think Izzo is doing his best work anymore. Also, this is the TV ratings game, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to throw that out there. The committee sets some of these up. I will never be convinced otherwise. The committee sets some of these up knowing they can deliver a matchup like this. Michigan State should not be a nine seed. They are not a nine seed. They don't deserve a nine seed. But they get it because North Carolina, Michigan State, second round is juicy TV ratings. That's why. It's the TV rating game, and it's probably going to bring me pain. I'm just... If you look at all the nine seeds across the board, who's the most dangerous? Northwestern, Texas A&M, TCU, or Michigan State? It's Michigan State by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah. It's the one, like, you usually see an eight or a nine seed take down a one seed, right? Like, you usually see an eight or nine get to the second weekend here. Michigan State's probably the best candidate out of all of them. I think A&M's also another one that could beat A&M. Houston. I was kind of pissed about that because that is a – I like this Houston team. I love this A&M team. You know how I feel about them. But I think if A&M can take down Houston, they might be my pick to go to the Final Four if they can get through that one game. I just think they're that good. They've got one of the best guards in the country in Wade Taylor. They also have Tyrese Radford too. They had a good run. They beat Kentucky in the SEC tournament. They had Florida on the ropes as well. They were up double digits in that game. Just kind of let it slip away in the end. But there's a lot of different intricacies of what you could do with the 8-9 matchups. Like, Northwestern's a good 9 seed too. Again, it's kind of like the weird seeding. I don't think the 68-team field is necessarily wrong, but I think the way some of these matchups got seeded, like the second I saw Michigan State check in at a 9, I was a little taken aback by it.
It's like
Auburn has a 4. I don't get it.
When we saw Virginia get in with the Colorado State and the 10 seed play-in game, I kind of felt like that was Michigan State's spot, and now Michigan State's not in the tournament, and they pull in at a 9. And that's where I'm telling you, maybe that should have been Indiana State in that spot. Maybe that should have been Wake Forest, or that should have been St. John's. And it went to Michigan State because the committee wants North Carolina, Michigan State in the second round. Like, those things just, they do happen. And I hope that I didn't steal somebody's bid, because I told you at the start of this, I would have rather seen Wake or St. John's straight up than my school. But here I am. I'm going to root for him.
All right. Real quick, I do want to talk about, before we get to our Final Fours, because in the last 3 years, we've seen a 15 take down a 2 seed. We saw Oral Roberts, then St. Peter's, and then last year it was Princeton.
I'll give you one guess who I'm going to go with. I'll give you one guess.
Are you going with the one that's already won a 15-2 before?
Yes. I'm going with the one who has the 2 seed with a head coach that's a historic loser. Tennessee is the one. Like, it's just Rick Barnes, loser. I'm not being disrespectful. Just, it's a fact. He does not win in the tournament. I'm going with Tennessee.
I'll actually go to the...
There's two really good candidates for this.
I think the other one is Arizona, is another good...
There's three really good candidates.
There's three, like, what was it, 2011 or 2012, when there were multiple 15 seeds that won that year, one of them.
Let me look at South Dakota State's KenPom really quick. See if I can talk myself into there being four really good candidates.
How about the Long Beach State story too? And Arizona is perennially inconsistent in the tournament. They've lost as a 2 seed before. They lost to Princeton last year, and Long Beach State is their head coach Don Monson was told at the beginning of the week that this will be all for him. He will coach through their conference tournament, and then after that, he is going to be fired. Well, lo and behold, they go out, win the Big West tournament, and boy, things got awkward. He had the quote, too. It was something along the lines of, when Jim Harbaugh says, who's got it better than us? Nobody. Tell Jim Harbaugh, Don Monson's got it better than him. First of all, I would say...
That's a great quote.
Check your bank accounts, buddy. But the fact that he is on this ride now, can Long Beach State fire this guy? And I'm not going to lie. I think there may have been a similar setup with Kevin Keats at NC State. I think he may have been fired. He was probably told at the beginning of the week, you know, you're going to get to coach this run and that'll be all. But now, like, can you fire Kevin Keats? Can you fire Don Monson? Like, here we are. Like, he's in the NCAA tournament after being a conference champion.
If he beats Arizona, he's keeping that job.
You can't fire him. Well, he may not keep the job because someone else may hire him.
Right. Oh, you wanted to fire him? Let's go. Come on. Yeah. Come on over here. Oklahoma might need an opening. No, man. Like, I really look at this, and now that we're talking about how vulnerable are these two seeds, they're all pretty vulnerable. I don't know if I can remember a year where I believe in the two seeds less. Arizona all season, especially on the road, has been kind of stinky, really inconsistent, up and down play. All year they haven't been trustworthy. Now they get this weird kind of matchup with Long Beach State. Tennessee has Rick Barnes and is going against St. Peter's, who I know it's a different coach and a different team, but has been in this spot and done it before. Not that Lehigh turned the trick twice or Mercer turned the trick twice or Middle Tennessee did, but you get the point. Like, it's kind of attractive for that reason, and it's Rick Barnes. Marquette has Shaka Smart. I don't know enough about Western Kentucky to tell you if they're any good, but I know they're the Hilltoppers and I like them, and I hate Marquette. So, again, like, it's kind of attractive just for the fact that Shaka routinely puts his teams in these spots since the VCU run. And then Iowa State, you talked about earlier, like, they keep winning games and nobody really can figure out how. I've chosen that you have to respect them, but there are a lot of reasons why you might not. The fact that...
They struggle away from home.
They struggle when they get out of Hilton. They're a slower-paced team. And that's not just, like, true road games where they struggle. They struggle on neutral floors, too, which is obviously not in the Big 12 tournament, but it's been an issue for them this season. It's just one of those things where all four of these two seeds, I see huge flaws. The flip side is most of the one seeds to me are really good. Like, this might be the strongest top of the tournament I've seen in a while, with North Carolina, Houston, Purdue, and UConn. I don't think they're all going to make the Final Four, but I think this is as difficult of a one seed to lop off as there's been.
I will say this. Looking at Western Kentucky and their resume here, Steve Lutz is a pretty good coach. On top of that, their roster, you've got the leftovers from Rick Stansberry cheating his balls off, too. Like, you've got Christian Lander. He's a former five-star player. You've got Brandon Newman. He played for Purdue before he came over to Western Kentucky this season. There's some names on this roster that don't be surprised if they're like, they may not be a true 15 seed.
Holy smokes. They play the fastest pace in the country.
That's how you really mess things up. And now I'm starting to be a little concerned about Marquette. I think this could be a lot closer game than some people think.
If you could,
this
just
kind of the Rodney Howard, Georgia Tech, like, this team is just built of Power Five transfers. There's a five star on the team. Like, there's talent on this Western Kentucky team.
This is actually kind of interesting. They also struggled the end of the regular season, then won their conference tournament. So a bid stealer.
Yeah, like, getting hot at the right time. It's, I don't know. This may be the team.
All four two seeds are extremely vulnerable to me. Tennessee, St. Peter's, I feel like is going to be the chic pick. I don't know if that's the one I'm actually going to go with. I do know I'm not putting Tennessee into the second weekend. They will lose to Texas or Virginia or Cali State. Doesn't matter to me. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can't take Tennessee. Zona, kind of the same deal. I don't know that they're going to lose to Long Beach State. I can't pick them against Dayton or Nevada. They've just been too inconsistent. Iowa State, I already said I have in the Elite Eight. And then Marquette, I'm just... Maybe they're the one. Maybe Western Kentucky is the team of destiny this year.
Yeah, could be.
And I hate Shaka, so I'm happy to do it.
All right, walk us through your final four.
Final Four is Auburn and North Carolina on the left side of the bracket, Houston and Creighton on the right side. Love Creighton. Talked about it earlier in the show. Road Warriors. All year they've gone away from home and won huge games, survived big spots. They are super impressive to me in the way that they approach and play the game. I really like Creighton to get out of that bracket in the Midwest where I think it's an entire bracket of garbage. Like Tennessee, to me, clearly, Rick Barnes stinks. Purdue, Matt Painter, January, February, perdon't. I don't think they're getting out of here. I like Creighton. I think the way the chips fell for them is really beneficial. Houston has been my number one team in America all season, and frankly, I don't care that they lost to Iowa State in the Big 12 title. Auburn is this year's UConn, and North Carolina is a wagon.
Mine is very similar to yours. My only difference is I've got UConn instead of Auburn, although this is subject to change. I am thinking about tweaking that into an Auburn play as well after kind of talking through it a little bit. All of this is sort of fire from the hip stuff. I think both of us will probably officially release our brackets Wednesday, like Wednesday midday maybe or something to really get it out there and let everyone know where we're at. But UConn to me has just been so damn good this year. And listen, like UConn is kind of playing like they were last year, except they've had a one next to their name for the latter portion of the season. Houston has just been fantastic this year. Carolina, I think, has the experience at critical parts of their roster, too. It's going to come down to me if either Cormac Ryan or Harrison Ingram can kind of fulfill that Brady Manek role when they did go to the national championship a couple years ago. And I'm with you. Like, Creighton, like, the South is just a clunker region to me, man. Or not the South. The Midwest is kind of a clunker region where there could be some chaos happening. I don't trust a lot of the teams there, and I've been looking for a reason to put Creighton through, and I feel like the way that the field sort of lined itself up, it lined itself up in a very nice way.
But that's my whole point when I bring up the fact that they are road warriors and they've been in those kind of adversarial spots and won those games. If there's any team in this region that I actually trust, it ain't Kansas, not this year, not with the health that they've had and some of the issues that they've had shooting and defending three-point shots. It's none of the – like Gonzaga, respectfully, get the fuck out of here. McNeese State, like, yeah. I'm not trusting any of the Cinderellas here. It's like you go through it. Creighton's the one that jumps out, is the only team in that region that's truly trustworthy to be in these spots.
Yeah, and even they're a little volatile too. Like they can go be a little streaky. They're one of those kill shot teams that relies on 10-0 runs at times.
Sure. But
they've got the defense to do it. That's the thing, is when you've got those top 25s in both metrics, the offense and the defensive efficiency, which Creighton does, 12-24, you find yourself in a good situation more times than not to get to the Elite Eight. You feel pretty good about that.
Not to go meathead with it either, but they just win ball games, and like that's something to me that matters.
They've got the best win in the country. They just win games. Crush UConn.
Big games, they just win them, and that means something to me. So that's where I'm like, I don't know. I feel like the team that I'm most likely to remove from my Final Four is North Carolina. I think I'm pretty set on Auburn, Houston, and Creighton. I think North Carolina is the only team that I would remove if I make a change.
Who's the team you don't have in your Final Four right now that you could see getting there that's kind of an out there pick a la what we saw in the tournament last year?
Michigan State is one, and I hate to say it again. I've watched them all year. I know they stink, but they do check all those boxes. Not the offensive efficiency, certainly, but they're top 10 defensively, guard-led with experience, lower seed. You're asking me for somebody who's kind of out there. Mm-hmm. New Mexico, hot at the right time. Clemson, is that low enough that I can say?
Yeah, for sure.
Brad Brownell has always been kind of the bridesmaid, not the bride. Like, he gets into these big spots, the head coach there, and loses a lot of these times. But this team and this Clemson team this year feels a little different to me. They've won a lot of those big games. The North Carolina game stands out. It's the second time in, what, like 60 years that Clemson won at UNC. So that was a big win for them this season. I kind of like Clemson as one of the lower seeds. Oregon is interesting if you want to really take a shot, and that is in that bracket of garbage. They'd have to beat Creighton. I think that's a tough ask, but if they do, why not? Anywhere else, I mean, do you want to take a Cinderella shot on one of these 14s? Colgate, Oakland? I don't know. Like the
beyond I'm not going that deep because those usually are fun first weekend stories, but then they get wiped in the second weekend, and it is what it is. But
like, could BYU be one of those?
So BYU was mine. I think Florida's another one that could certainly be there. Even Washington State, I think, is one that could find its way into the Final Four somehow. And South Carolina is another one. I mean, you and I and Potsy, we've talked about South Carolina all season long as one of those teams that can just go on a run, and they certainly could be that team this year.
You know what my problem is with them is, and I don't understand why it happens. Obviously, I'm not the guy doing the math. I'm not a math major. The net, I'm not even going to begin to fucking approach. Nobody knows what's going on in the net. But South Carolina would get these incredible wins in conference. These massive wins, and you'd go, they've got to be ranked this week. They've got to be, and they wouldn't be ranked. And then you'd look at KenPom, and they'd be like 57th in the country. And I'm like, what is the deal here? What am I missing? Because I turn the game on, and I watch, and they win games against quality opponents. I feel like they should be getting respect. What is it that they aren't?
You know
maybe
what happens?
I'm just an idiot, but it scares me off of them.
You know what happens? When they lose, they get throttled. Yeah. Like, Alabama 74-47, Auburn 101-61, Auburn again 86-55. When they lose big. So that's the stuff I think that hurts them. I know a lot of these metrics say they cap off where they really care how much you lost by. Like it's, I think once you lose by like 20 or so points, beyond that they don't really care what the margin is. But I think that South Carolina, they have the chops to go up against anybody. Like, they've won big games on the road this year. I mean, listen to how they finished out the season here, all right? Three of their final five games were on the road. They won at Ole Miss, at A&M, home against Florida, lost at home against Tennessee by 7, and won on the road against Mississippi State. You finished the season, 4 out of 5 tournament teams, you went 4-1, and 3 of those wins came on the road. Like, yeah, that's the impressive stuff to me. You beat Tennessee on the road this year, too. They've got a number of super impressive victories. I think the thing that may also hurt them is that when they do win, they don't win by these mega margins. Like, I'm looking through right now, Mississippi State 4-point win, Florida 6-point win, A&M 2-point win.
They kind of blast Kentucky.
They did, yeah. They won that one by 17, but like Tennessee 4-pointer, Ole Miss a 3-pointer, like Mizzou, they went to overtime against them, 1-2. So they don't win by big margins. But you know who else didn't like win their tournament games by big margins either? Reminds me of a little team called Loyola from a couple years ago.
Oh boy.
Like they were just squeaking by in the NCAA tournament, but that's all you need to do. It's a survive and advance type of operation.
Nobody cares.
If you can do that, like South Carolina is a battle-tested team, it feels like. You'll know 5 minutes in whether or not they're going to have a chance to win the game. If they're getting run out of the gym, they're probably not going to be the team that's going to make a comeback on you. But if they're in the thick of things, they've got a chance to make a deep run.
All right, yeah, I think I'm not going to take Michigan State as my favorite long shot. I'm thinking Clemson and Oregon are the two that I would like to really hang my hat on as two lower seeds that could make a Final Four.
I'm going to go Florida, and I'm going to go South Carolina. Maybe a little sprinkle on BYU as well. All right, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
I got to go fill out brackets, man. I got work to put in.
How many do you do? Oh, we talked about this before. You're a multi-bracket guy.
Well, I don't change them too much.
Which means you're a loser.
I like to stick to one national champion, maybe two national champions.
And just some tweaks along the way.
I'm increasing my odds of winning a pool. If I fire one bracket into 16 pools, then that one bracket loses, and I'm dead in 16 different pools. I want to increase my chances.
Why don't you just no ball, and then you put one in, and then you cash out along the way?
Why? It's not as fun for me that way.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on our Bracket Selection Sunday special. If you missed any of it, check it out on the Basketball U podcast. We will talk college basketball with you every single Saturday throughout the NCAA tournament, 8 to 9 a.m. on ESPN Chicago. We'll talk to you Saturday.
See ya. All right.